office of the minister, presenters who's going to make submissions. Welcome to day two of the public hearings on the Protection, Promotion, Development and Management of Indigenous Knowledge Systems Bill, which seeks to provide for the protection, promotion, development and management of Indigenous knowledge systems, to provide for the establishment and functions of the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office, to provide for the management of rights of Indigenous knowledge holders, to provide for the establishment and functions of the Advisory Panel on Indigenous Knowledge Systems, to provide for access and conditions of access to knowledge of Indigenous and local communities, to provide for the registration, accreditation and certification of Indigenous knowledge practitioners, to provide for the facilitation and coordination of Indigenous knowledge systems-based innovation, and provide for matters incidental thereto. You most welcome. We believe that you here also because you are excited about this bill. You're here to enrich the bill, to bring to our attention areas that we need to look at and probably amend. But the inputs that you're going to be giving us will be taken into consideration. We'll deliberate on them, and if the committee agrees, we'll be incorporated in the bill, or if not incorporating, we'll be removed. Those needs to be removed, or those that need to be expatiated on, we'll do that. But we believe that this is one of the important bills that cuts across a lot of departments, which we have already met with. They've made submissions, arts and culture, environment, health, COCTA, trade and industry. We believe the aspects that touch on the IPLA Act, and so we're looking forward to the submissions today. Let's start also by introducing ourselves so that we know who is here. My name is Lindiwe Masebo. I'm the acting chairperson of the Committee on Science and Technology. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Annelie Lotriet, member of the committee.
Morning, I'm Chantal King, member of the committee.
Morning, Nokuzola Ndongeni, member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Agnes Beck from the committee.
And I'm Nick Kurnoff, also a member. Kasal Matale, committee member.
Shanti Kubisa, committee member.
Good morning, Vincent van Rena, Western Cape, Legislative Khoisan Council. I'm an observer.
Anthony Rees, Chairman of the Traditional and Natural Health Alliance, an observer today.
Say there, at the back, please introduce yourself.
Chris Makuotiti, just an observer.
Good morning, my name is Bernd Kleinsmith. I'm a monitor from the parliamentary monitoring group.
Good morning, I'm Suresh Nigamanda, Parliamentary Communication Services.
Good morning, my name is Christoph and I'm from CBNIT.
Morning, Joeline van Wyk, Chairperson of the Press Gallery at Parliament, and also parliamentary journalist for Landbou Weekblad magazine.
My name is Mark Clausen. I'm from LPP. I'm observing today. Thank you.
Gonzo Mutobi, DST Legal Services.
Leander France, Parliamentary Liaison Office Ministry.
Good morning. I'm Carol van Wyk from the Department of Science and Technology.
I'm
Yona Seleti from the Department of Science and Technology.
Morning, Shumit Pango, DST.
Good morning, I'm Shirlene Munsami from the Department of Science and Technology Legal Services.
Good morning, my name is Carol Marule. I'm a legal researcher from the Chief State Law Advisor.
Good morning, Honorable Chairs and Honorable Members. I'm Barbara Lewis, I'm the Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
Good morning, Nicole Farson from Publishers Association.
Good morning, Tom Sukhanandan from the Department of Science and Technology.
Greetings, my name is Tobeka Kendani, I'm a stakeholder.
And good morning, my name is Martina Swart, and I represent the South African Royals Council. So I will be making a presentation on the IKS Bill.
Thank you very much, and welcome once again. I must also give an apology from Honorable Paulson, who requested that he'll be a bit late this morning, member of the committee. As I said, we're looking forward to fruitful inputs, and we, at least we're fortunate that today the screens are working properly, because we laid a complaint yesterday that we're disadvantaged. And would request the copy of your presentation or your slides or via the committee secretary, Ms. Shanaz. Thank you very much. So, without much of waste of time, Ms. Swart from the SA Rooibos Council, we all ears. Thank you.
Okay, good morning, everybody, and thank you for the opportunity to share our inputs on the Indigenous Knowledge Systems Bill with the committee and with observers and with other people present here. Just a very short introduction to who I represent. So the South African Rooibos Council is an independent organization. We are also voluntary, and our aim is to responsibly promote rooibos and the attributes of rooibos to the consumer and protecting the interests of the rooibos consumer, but also of all the stakeholders of the South African Rooibos Council. And we are mostly doing this by focusing on communication and research. We support, as an organization, the need for better coordination definitely between government departments and also between government departments and the private sector. And with this regard, and this is also in regard to the protection and management of Indigenous knowledge. Taking the above into consideration, we are broadly supportive of the IKS Bill. We believe it's a good bill, and our comments below must be please considered in this context. So there are three broad areas of concern that we've identified. The first area of concern is the possibility of competing jurisdictional responsibility when the bill is considered in the context of other legislation or proposed legislation, and then also extraterritorial application of the IKS Bill across the borders of South Africa. Then the second area of concern focuses on the interpretation and effect of various sections and clauses, which I will share with you one by one as we go along. And then the last one is issues relating to the committees and offices which the IKS Bill seek to establish. We do not have any problem with the committees or offices, but we do feel that some clarification and some specific guidance, more specific guidance, is needed for the establishment and the functioning of these committees. So if first of all we look at the two points that we identified for the first area of concern is competing jurisdictional responsibility. There is a possibility, and we are asking you to consider this point, that Section 32 of the current bill, as it stands, does not alter the protection afforded in the Intellectual Property Law Amendment Bill. So should both bills come into action as acts, there may be a contradiction. The second one is that the bill does not state how protection of IKS rights are to coexist with other intellectual property rights. So basically what we mean here is Indigenous knowledge is registered, and then this knowledge that is registered goes on and it goes through research and it goes through various processes, and then IP is also registered on this knowledge. And there's currently not sufficient guidance, in our opinion, to guide how these two claims on a product, on existing transborder application. The bill currently applies to all persons in South Africa, including the state of South Africa. So, through this bill, if you do not register the IK, then persons in South Africa may be prevented from using the indigenous knowledge, while access to such knowledge of persons in other jurisdictions may seem unimpeded or remain unimpeded. So those are the only two points we have under the jurisdictional responsibility. Then the interpretation of sections and clauses. Very broadly in this section, we are not unhappy with the inclusions, but we do think that the bill could benefit from more specific guidance on a number of issues. So the definition of indigenous knowledge as it is currently included in the bill is very vague, and we understand that it has been drafted widely to attempt to capture a wide range of knowledge, and we do not have a problem with that per se, but in the bill there is, in the definition there is a part that refers to the assimilation of indigenous knowledge in communities, and this is not clearly defined at all. So it is most likely that a judgment call will be made by authorities on a case-to-case basis, which can create uncertainty and inconsistency in the application of the bill should it come into an act. Then also, this is just a point of clarification. In Section 2, and the limitation to registered indigenous knowledge is at odds with Chapter 4, which does not make reference to indigenous knowledge having to be registered in order to attract protection. So it is just two clauses in the bill that is, the one is a blanket clause saying all indigenous knowledge, and the other one says specifically registered. It is not clear whether the intention of the legislature is to protect indigenous knowledge or registered only or all indigenous knowledge. Then the second area that we have some comments on is about eligibility and protection. The eligibility criteria in Section 11 is vague, and we are afraid that when applied will be largely subjective, and it is uncertain how this will be tested by authorities. We think it is also that maybe the Act, if it comes into effect, could benefit in its application from a guidance document of some kind, because we do understand that all these specificities does not necessarily belong in a bill or in an Act. So the vague language could make it difficult to determine whether IK ceases to meet criteria and fall into the public domain as stated in the bill. Because there's a clause that's saying that should IK cease to meet the criteria, then it will fall into a public domain. But the criteria is so broad that at the moment we do not see how this will be, how this will ever can possibly come into effect. Then the registration of indigenous knowledge. The IKIS bill does not detail at the moment the process and the mechanism for the registration of indigenous knowledge, or it does not show how such processes will be managed and recorded and accessed. The IKIS bill only states that NICSA may determine such a process. It is suggested that a chapter or some guidance is at least included on how the application for indigenous knowledge should happen. Then while the IKIS bill does make provision for publication of registration granted, it does not provide for opposition to be made to an application of registration. In our capacity as the Rooibos Council, we are currently working with the Sand Council of South Africa and the National Kwen Sand Council on traditional knowledge. And we are just experiencing that there may be different groups that come and apply for this, so it is, the bill should also allow for groups that do not agree with application to at least bring their case before the Department of Science and Technology. Then the rights conferred on the holders of indigenous knowledge. The bill provides very little oversight over the trustees, because we're saying that indigenous knowledge will be assigned as a property right to a community, and then a trustee will be appointed to act on behalf of this community. And we feel that currently the bill holds very little oversight over the trustee, who holds the traditional knowledge on behalf of the indigenous community, and it does little to ensure that the trustee will act in the best interest of the community, specifically because the role of the trustee is coupled with economic benefits that may accrue to the community. This may be subject to abuse if specific guidance is not included. Then we are saying that there can be multiple claims of ownership. I already made this point. The IKS bill also seeks to confer almost exclusive economic benefits to the holder of indigenous knowledge. Now, this is obviously a concern for the rooibos council and for the rooibos industry as a whole, since the rights are extremely wide and it can have quite far-reaching financial consequences for the rooibos tea industry. And it may also have an effect on the bargaining power of the communities in respect of the benefit sharing agreement. Right. Then license to use. So here we are now speaking a little bit to our current processes with NEMBA, as opposed to the processes that the council will have to enter into with DST. So it appears from the current wording of the bill that a benefit sharing agreement with indigenous communities in terms of NEMBA will not suffice to meet the requirements of a benefit sharing agreement in terms of the IKS bill. This is since NEMBA is asking us to enter into a benefit sharing agreement directly with the indigenous community, but in the case of the IKS bill, it is asking the applicant to enter into a benefit sharing agreement with NICSO. So a third party whose activities may constitute biotrade and bioprospecting on the NEMBA side and the use of IK on the side of the IKS bill will have to enter, as it stands now, into two separate benefit sharing agreements. This could result in a third party having to pay benefit twice for the same activity. And we feel that this should be considered in the IKS bill. Then NICSO, at the moment, as it is captured in the bill, also has absolute discretion to grant licenses. And it is granted an inordinate amount of bargaining power against application for licenses, as well as the determination of royalties payable by a license holder. So we would like to ask that a consideration is made that criteria for determining the maximum threshold be considered and either included here or in another document if this is more suitable. Then two small contradictions that we picked up in the drafting of the bill is in Section 13, it requires that the user of indigenous knowledge enters into a benefit sharing agreement with the holder of indigenous knowledge. So that would mean almost directly with the community. However, in Section 26, it requires that a person who intends to use indigenous knowledge for commercial purposes must enter into a benefit sharing agreement with NICSO. So we would just like to have certainty on this point. Then the IKS bill provides for the accreditation of indigenous knowledge practitioners by NICSO, but the IKS bill also requires that such person will make application in the prescribed manner, but that is all the only way which it is referred to, but it doesn't give any guidance, and it only states that NICSO must make recommendations to the minister regarding the norms and standards of accreditation. This is more of a broad commentary, but we think that somewhere in the bill or in alternative documentation, it should be captured how an indigenous knowledge practitioner will be accredited. Then we move on to the third area of comment that we have, and this is for the committees and offices. At the moment, the functions of NICSO as defined in the bill are very wide and it lacks guidance for implementation. The head of NICSO is appointed by the minister and subject to directions and instructions issued by the minister and the director general only. And the head of NICSO only has to report, as it currently stands in the bill, to the director general. So this puts a lot of power in a very small area. Then our other concern is in cases where indigenous knowledge is recognized or registered, but there's no community that has yet come forward to claim the indigenous knowledge. The bill states that NICSO will act as custodian of the IK and the ownership of this IK will vest in Nixo. We do not have a problem with that, per se, but there is no specification on how funds accrued from such ownership and benefits shall be allocated, because if there is no community, where would the funding go? And we feel that this can also be susceptible to abuse. So this is something that we need to possibly consider. Then the advisory panel and the dispute resolution committee, there is no provision for private sector participation in the advisory panel. So at the moment it is the state, it is indigenous knowledge practitioners, and then it is what is referred to as specialists in the discipline of practice. This could be interpreted to include private sector partners, but considering that benefit sharing agreements will be entered into between Nixo communities and the private sector, we think that this is a concern. Specialists in the discipline of practice is also not defined, so it is not clear what is meant by that. Then the dispute resolution committee has a unconstrained legislative power. I will speak a little bit more clearly on that in my next slide. Then there is no provision for how decisions will be made by the communities. Instead, the bill permits the minister to determine the procedure. It is therefore unclear whether a consensus or a majority will be required for decisions. And then there's no guidance in the IKF bill regarding the qualification or criteria or number of persons to be appointed as member of the dispute resolution committee. The minister can appoint any person that he or she wishes to appoint. Then offices and penalties. Here I'm speaking to the powers of the dispute resolution committee. At the moment it states in the bill that the committee may determine any sanction, and the emphasis is ours, for not complying with the bill, and this will likely culminate in arbitrary and irrational determination of penalties. There is also, for interpretation, possibly a contradiction, as to my next point. The bill currently includes different penalties for, on the one side, the use of indigenous knowledge without authorization, or for a false claim to be a certified IKRAE practitioner. So for these things, the penalty is either 30,000 rand fine or 1 year imprisonment. But then on the other hand, for interference with an official in the performance of duties, the fine remains 30,000, but the imprisonment goes up to 3 years. The IKS bill, we suggest that the IKS bill should be amended to provide that the fine should be up to a maximum of 30,000 for both of these offences, and that imprisonment for interference with an official should also be reduced to 1 year, so that the two penalties come in line. Okay, so then I come to my conclusion. As stated above, we are broadly supportive of the IKS bill, and we really feel that there are some flaws which we have highlighted in this commentary, but we also feel that these flaws can be remedied through careful and considerate redrafting of certain sections of the bill, and we implore the drafters of the IKS bill to undertake this task. We are willing to address any questions which this submission may prompt. We can clarify any on any point. I need to qualify that I am not in the legal profession, so I will answer your questions as far as I am able. But if today I'm faced with questions which I'm not able to answer, I will refer it back to our legal counsel and come back to the committee. And we will also amplify any arguments that we have raised. We would like to thank the Portfolio Committee for Science and Technology for giving us the opportunity to submit both written comments and to present the summary to those comments today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Swart, for your submission, highlighting areas that you believe that will render the bill not as effective as it's supposed to be. What we also intend to do is to ensure, because the bill also impacts on other acts from other departments, that it should probably create a one-stop shop so that an ordinary person is not sent from pillar to post to obtain a certificate or something like that. So I see also from your presentation you're trying to do just that. So your submission the committee will consider. But it, now, I just wanted to point on, I think on paragraph 35, on section D, the abbreviation of NICSO, you included a T. If you just look on your paragraph 35. And I also want to bring to everybody's attention that some of the submission probably are also details that will go on to the regulations that the minister will present after the bill has been finalized and adopted. Honorable members, Honorable Dr. Lotrit, and then Honorable Koranov.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much for this presentation. I would just like to know, you said that the Rooibos Council is in principle supportive of this bill. Could you perhaps just elaborate more on this? Why would the Council be in support of this?
Right. So we have been for a considerable period of time now engaged with the issue of traditional knowledge. And we are currently part of a working group to work towards a benefit and access sharing agreement with the National Koi and Sand Council of South Africa and the South African Sand Council. And we feel that this is an area where a lot of energy has gone into and many discussions. And it is now a point where we need to slowly but surely also move towards engaging better with these issues, and we think that the bill is speaking to a part maybe of the chain that is not at the moment really addressed by the legislation under NIMBA, and it is also a part of the chain that should take into consideration that the registration of Indigenous knowledge for communities need to be considered.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much for, I think it's a very comprehensive written comments, you know, you gave us. But, you know, the interesting remark you've made is that a flaw in the IKS bill is that it doesn't show us how they coexist with other intellectual property rights. Now, that was the mistake, according to the lawyers, in the Intellectual Property Amendment Act. And that's why, you know, there's a big fight about this. So that is a very careful area to go to in terms of intellectual property. Can I ask you, will this bill, say if it goes through like you have seen it, will it impact negatively on the rooibos industry?
Honorable Professor Kubis.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for such a comprehensive and thought-provoking presentation, ma'am. You have spoken to the area of jurisdiction with our bills, so which is a very critical area. I mean, would you please expatiate more how this could be narrowed in the benefit of the bill at hand? You have spoken about the competing that it competes with other bills in the area of jurisdiction. So how could this be narrowed in the interest of the IKS bill?
Okay, all right. I will first speak to the first question. I think the bill, as it stands now, is not it lacks specific guidance on a number of issues. And I think if it had to be passed as it is now, a lot of power is put in the hands of NICSO without any private sector representation, and the Rooibos Council and the Rooibos industry is obviously from the private sector. So I think it would negatively impact the industry. Yes, to answer in a nutshell, And I think the reason why it would negatively impact the industry is the reason that we've put here, that there's a lot of power seated in the committees, that sometimes there is referral to registered Indigenous knowledge, sometimes to just Indigenous knowledge. We also think the definition is extremely wide the process for registration is not clear, and these are a number of loopholes that really makes the rose industry quite vulnerable. Okay. Then to speak to the second question, are you speaking about areas of jurisdiction? Are we speaking about the intellectual property bill or about the DEA, so the NEMBA, intellectual property bill? This is not, we also attended a workshop for the intellectual property amendment bill in Pretoria, and I think that they also spoke to the idea of a one-stop shop for these kind of legislations. I don't think this is something for us as an industry to comment on. I think this is something, and also if I'm correct, at this workshop there was a reference made to a transitional committee. I cannot recall the exact name of the committee now, but there was reference made to a committee that would have representation of both the DST and of the Department of Trade and Industry, and that this committee would look after how issues of specifically Indigenous knowledge and IP coincide. And I think that the establishment of this committee, as it is stated in the Intellectual Property Amendment Bill, remains a very valid consideration. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
Thank you very much, Ms. Swartz. And you also alluded to the fact that this bill seeks to provide a sui generis protection of Indigenous knowledge. And I just wanted to find out, how do you see this bill outside the rooibos area, but in really protecting the Indigenous knowledge, so that Indigenous knowledge doesn't go through what rooibos went through, like the rooibos, the sparkling wine, in competing at international level.
So we are speaking to the wider natural products industry, apart from how it would impact on the wider natural products. I think that when we work with other natural products, and I'm sure you also have some representation from other industry bodies, is they're much smaller than the rooibos industry. And I think in many instances not as well organized. So this again speaks to the need for the bill to be specific in its criteria and to be specific in how it will be managed by NICSO as the management committee of the bill, and also how you engage with these communities, because we have a formal body, then I think Honeybush also has, but much smaller than us. Adavira, I believe, also has an industry body, but there are a number of Indigenous products in South Africa, natural products, that do not have formally organized Indigenous bodies. And today is the Bio-Prospecting Forum meeting in Pretoria, and there these industries do come together, and this is a platform for them to be presented. And I think they are also speaking to the issue of benefit sharing, as it has been engaged with through the Department of Environmental Affairs. So I do think there is, I do think this process does link or is in alignment or will run parallel to the experience that these wider natural product interest groups already had with access and benefit sharing under the NEMBA legislation.
Thank you for the presentation. It was really nicely set up. But I just have one concern. This bill, as it stands now, Do you think it will foster maybe tribalism, conflict between different tribes in South Africa? Because if you have to consider, they need to put in a request to say that they are the actual holders of this knowledge, and it could cut across different tribes. Do you think it could foster that? And do you also, in your opinion, consider that the Dispute Resolution Committee would be able to help and assist in that? Because if you read, it just basically said they only come into play after NICSO have made the decision. Thanks.
I think that's a very valid point, and I think that we have a number of groupings that definitely could come forward and claim Indigenous knowledge. We're seeing this already happening in practice with traditional knowledge. So I definitely think that the Dispute Resolution Committee only comes into play after NICSO, and that is if the committee is well put together, and if some more specific guidance is given on how this committee is put together with proper representation from the side of the state, the side of the practitioners, private sector, plus the claimants of Indigenous knowledge, I think that they could really play a role in resolving disputes should this arise. Yeah. And I also think what we have... there is also a case to be made for a function of this committee to bring different communities together who try to, because often the factions who try to apply for traditional or Indigenous knowledge, they are small. So there may be an argument made for certain groupings coming together and collectively making these applications.
Honourable Ndongeng.
Thanks, Chair. On your paragraph 37, can you please give us, you have a suggestion, or can you please narrate or input what can be done in connection with the task? The TSK bill does not specify how the funds accrued from such ownership. Thank you, Chair.
Right, I'm speaking off the cuff because I think this is a... But if, so say Indigenous knowledge is assigned to a product, or there is Indigenous knowledge on a product, and this is not, it vested in NICSO, and it is not part of a community, or it does not go to a community, then it will be held in NICSO.
Sorry, ma'am. Just want to find out, you're referring to another bill here, or it's supposed to be IKS?
No, I'm not. That is a spelling mistake, and I will correct both that and the one you pointed out in paragraph 35.
It's IKS.
Yes, okay. Definitely. I'm not referring to another bill. So what could happen is this: the benefits that accrue would obviously go to NICSO. NICSO will keep the benefits in trust. And either NICSO can be tasked with identifying the community that the benefits could accrue to, that is a possibility, or a fund could be established to assist IK applicants to help with their processes. There's a number of ways that such funds could be applied. But our concern is that the funds will be lying there, and there will be no community that these funds is earmarked for. So it will just... I could make some more suggestions for social development, but all of these suggestions are really dependent on a community who could be the beneficiary of these funds being identified. So I think this is something that should be looked at in the poll.
So that's where the trustees comes in.
It's where the trustees comes in, but this specific point that I'm speaking to is if there is no community. So the bill refers to a situation where Indigenous knowledge is identified and registered, but there's no community. So then the Indigenous knowledge vests in NICSO. from the private sector or the people who are working with this product will start to pay over benefits to Nixo. So our question is, what will be done with this money? And if I hear you correctly, then you are asking our suggestion. So I said it could be made available to other parties, maybe applying for indigenous knowledge, or it could be used for social development, or Nixo could be tasked to identify the appropriate community that is entitled to these funds. Oops. Does that answer your question?
Sure, what the rules of the conversation is, that's exactly what I was not sure. So I just wanted to ask about when, do we get a chance to participate? Is it appropriate, or are we just to observe completely?
You observe.
I'm a representative of an organization or a body that really wants to participate in this conversation. In fact, we heard about this conversation in a very roundabout way. We're sitting here, so... Right now, I'm not so sure how do we get access to the conversation. So, please guide.
You're going to make a presentation, submission, isn't it?
Madam, we could. At this point, I'm really just trying to find the appropriate way of talking meaningfully. I don't want to access or to divert your process.
I just want to find out, are you going to make a submission? Did you respond to the advert and you here to make a submission?
Madam, we were not informed in any form that there's going to be these submissions. We heard about it in a very roundabout way, and we made our way here to come and participate. Right now, I'm sitting literally here as somebody who just heard one presentation with something to say, but I don't want to do so in a way that will be disruptive. So yes, we can make a presentation. If that would be the appropriate way of doing it between now and tomorrow. But for the now, my question is, how do I participate in this conversation that will be appropriate?
Okay, you'll get in touch with the secretary of the committee, and then she'll see how she schedules for your submission, oral submission.
Thank you.
The same as you, sir.
Ma'am, just a question of clarity. I see there are intersections for questions and discussions. My name is Chief Melvin. I am on the program to do a submission. Just a point of clarity, questions and discussions, are we not allowed to ask questions? So the questions and answers only for the members of the committee, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So if there's anything, you can factor it into your submission.
Thank you, we will. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Swart, thank you very much for the presentation, and as you heard from other members, it's well documented. We will still form part of the discussion and deliberation of the committee. If there's a need to ask you to come back for clarity on some areas, we will do so. But we'd like to thank you for the submission, and if there's a supplementary that you'd want to send, you can do so through the committee secretary. Thank you very much. The second presentation, I'm not sure if Mr. Griswold is here from the SA Association of Flavor and Fragrance Industry. If not, the next one is Dr. Nicholas Farson.
Oh, yes.
He's here. Publishers Association of South Africa. Yes. Yeah, you don't have slides. Okay. Maybe you can come to the front.
Madam Chair, members, and others present, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Just to expand a bit on, you know, what is my interest as a publisher in indigenous knowledge, I recently met a young playwright. She's from Uniondale, and Willamore, and she's written a play based on the old story of what we call in Afrikaans die watermeisie, the water maid. Her father was a teacher in Bavianskloof in the Eastern Cape. And this story lives among the people in the Bavianskloof, but not only there. The story of the water maid is well known, I think, throughout South Africa and other parts of the world as well. So this young playwright has written a play on this, which will now be performed at four of the main arts festivals in South Africa, and hopefully it will be published eventually. So I use this as an illustration of the deep interest, you know, of people in indigenous knowledge in the form of stories, which very often carry great truths about human beings and about the life we're living, the world in which we are living. I've been involved in a wonderful book which was compiled by a literature academic, Dr. Jean Lombard. It's called in Afrikaans now Die Ding in die Riete, the thing in the reeds. It's about what we call die wonderslang, the magic snake, which appears, for example, in the Garib with a diamond on its head. And it appears in many different forms and among many different languages, groups, cultures in South Africa. And this book is a wonderful collection from various backgrounds in South Africa. Well, even the Bible, old authors like von Willich, current authors like Elias Nel, George Weideman, also old authors like Thomas Mafolo, A.C. Jordan, Diana Ferris, etc. So I'm using this as an illustration again of the kind of interest that we as publishers take in indigenous knowledge. And I think I can say that publishers have contributed in the past to preserving and maintaining an interest in indigenous knowledge in the form of myths, fables, legends, etc. I was also, if I may, pay tribute to the Department of Basic Education that through the past few years has stimulated interest in folklore because they have been requiring increasingly that our submissions of prescribed works include folklore. So a great interest has been stirred by that, and I think it has stimulated quite a number of publications of folklore in the past few years. So that, from a personal publisher's point of view, just to explain why we are interested in this. Now, PASA, the Publishers Association of South Africa, currently is the biggest organization representing various publishers. We are committed to creativity, literacy, the free flow of ideas, and we encourage a culture of reading. We continue to support the goal of protecting indigenous and traditional knowledge. From May 2008, when the DDI started its process on what eventually became IPLA, that has been referred to quite a number of times, the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act, we've been interacting with the DDI. So we welcome this new initiative, probably not all that new anymore, but this initiative, you know, to protect and maintain indigenous knowledge, and we wish to congratulate the Department of Science and Technology on this initiative. Now, we have specific interests in the bill, so I am not going to address, you know, any fields outside of our own field of operation. Our interest concerns three specific issues, which I'll summarize shortly, and then I'll expand on them. So our three issues are, firstly, concerning exceptions. There is an exception for academic works. We wish to suggest that be extended to all literary and published works. We wish to suggest that intellectual property rights that came into existence before the enactment of the Act should be exempted from criminal sanction. And we wish to suggest that existing rights should be preserved, existing rights as they exist in intellectual property. So you can see we are talking very much from the point of existing intellectual property and how indigenous knowledge is reflected or captured in intellectual property. So I'll comment in more details, and if you want to refer to the bill, I'll give you the specific references. The first is the section 26(4)(e). It concerns the access to and use of indigenous knowledge. There is an exception for academic works, but we suggest that should be extended to all literary and published works. It should specifically include publishing and republishing of works that consist of or include indigenous knowledge resources. So we have an alternative extended wording which I've given to the Secretary, and I'll read to you what we suggest. Currently, 26(4)(e) refers to academic purposes. So we would like to add literary and published works that consist of or include indigenous knowledge, such as books, newspaper and magazine articles, journal articles and theses. I just wish to make clear that publishing of such material is, of course, subject to the ordinary requirements of copyright. So authors will benefit from royalties if their work gets published or included in anthologies, for example. So there's no way in which one can misappropriate published works or works that are new manuscripts. Our second suggestion regards section 28(2). This concerns offences and penalties. Now, if one says that you want to include published works, broadly speaking, then they should also be exempted from the requirements in 28(2). So there must be a text in the provision relating to criminal sanctions, which is consequential to the permitted use that will be allowed by the Act without authorization. So there are two ways in which work can then be published. One would be through authorization of registered materials, or then secondly, if those uses are permitted as exemptions. So we would like to add to 28(2) the following words, being otherwise permitted to do so in terms of this Act. So it would read fully, we suggest, any person who uses indigenous knowledge without authorization through registration or being otherwise permitted to do so in terms of this Act shall be guilty of an offence and liable on conviction, etc. Then our third suggestion concerns section 33, which is about transitional arrangements. There's only one subsection under section 33. We would like to add a second one. Now, this again concerns existing intellectual property rights. So the bill should protect continued use and protection of intellectual property rights consisting of or containing indigenous knowledge resources that came into existence before enactment. This should apply, say, to further editions and reprints of existing books under copyright. So we suggest an additional subsection, which will be number 2 under 33, which will read as follows. The provisions of this Act shall not apply to the use and protection of intellectual property rights consisting of or containing indigenous knowledge that came into existence prior to the commencement of this Act. So again, it is acknowledging existing intellectual property rights. Those are the three suggestions we would like to make in view of the possible publication in various formats of indigenous knowledge. Then just to conclude, there have been, from reports of the meeting yesterday and this morning already, various references to IPLA, the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act. We would like to add our concern to the multiplicity of legislation that would apply to the uses of indigenous knowledge and traditional works. In our view, passage of this bill will mean that users of these works will have to face the totality of requirements of a new IKS Act and of the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act, which may well be conflicting in some areas. IPLA has been on the statute books for over 3 years now without having come into force. Now, PASA in the past has expressed its deep concern about the extended and indefinite rights of copyright that will be applied by IPLA to works which do not meet the copyright requirements of originality and where the authorship and ownership will be uncertain. You might be aware of the argument that what has happened with IPLA is that one system of copyright has been, as it were, transplanted onto indigenous knowledge, and the two don't quite marry very well, and that we find in IPLA. So we are in favor of the route which this bill is taking, and we would suggest that if the IKS Systems Bill is passed into law, IPLA be substantially modified, if not repealed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your presentation and being specific on the areas that would want addition or omission, or also proposals of the last sentence that the Intellectual Property Law Amendment Act be substantially modified, if not repealed. Let me give to members of the committee to pose questions. The submission is clear. It's clear, but thank you very much for the submission. When the committee deliberates, to look at all the areas that you have spoken to, the proposals that you have made, and see how it fits into enriching the bill. Thank you very much. Thank you, sir. Can I just find out if Mr. Griswood is not here yet? Okay. We will have Ms. Aishia Pinto, if here.
Good morning. I'd like to thank the chairperson and members of the committee for allowing me to present. I am an African. I owe my being to the koi and the sand whose desolate soul haunt the great expanses of the beautiful Cape. They who fell victim to the most merciless genocide our native land has ever seen. They who were the first to lose their lives in the struggle to defend our freedom and independence. Today, as a country, we keep an audible silence about these ancestors of the generations that live, which in its remembering should teach us never to be inhumane again. Thabo Mbeki, 1996. The United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Please be patient. I'll be touching on numerous points. I just want you to understand where I'm coming from.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you saying which organization or who are you representing, or is it?
My name is Ms. Aisha Pinto. I worked as the personal assistant to the traditional leader of the Kumani San, the late David Hermanus Kreiper. I represent the Hanasep, which in normal language are the Kreipers in the Southern Kalahari. Convinced that the control by indigenous peoples over developments affecting them and their lands, territories and resources will enable them to maintain and strengthen their institutions, cultures and traditions and to promote their development in accordance with their aspirations and needs. Recognizing that respect for indigenous knowledge, culture and traditional practices contributes to sustainable and equitable development and proper management of the environment. UN Declaration 2007. Acknowledging the Charter of the United Nations, the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the Vienna Declaration and Program of Action affirm the fundamental importance of the right to self-determination of all peoples, by virtue of which they freely determine their political status and freely pursue the economic, social, and cultural development. I have taken your bill and I have edited it and corrected it according to the way we see it. Indigenous cultural expressions means, and this is what the bill has to cover, phonetic or verbal expressions, musical and sound expressions, archaeological and historical sites. And here, when I'm looking at archaeological and historical sites, I'm referring to the rock art, which we have to expropriate because it's ours. Artifacts, designs, ceremonies, technologies, visual and performing arts, and literature, with no exceptions. Now, I'd like to start with terminology, because naming is very important. And how you define things make people visible or invisible. Now, this term, trustee, okay. When we refer to trustee, as it's been used in the European context, it has been white people speaking for us, on behalf of us, and thinking for their own interests. My interpretation of trustee means the indigenous knowledge holder or the indigenous community. I would like to draw the distinction between an indigenous knowledge holder and an indigenous community. Even though you have indigenous communities, it does not mean that all of those people are a specific indigenous knowledge holder. For example, Kuluba, who is a Bushman, plays music on the bow. He's the only person that can do that, so he's an indigenous knowledge holder. In the various communities in South Africa, you have indigenous knowledge holders and you have a specific
person that that has a specific skill or knowledge within a specific Indigenous community. So your bill has to cover the Indigenous knowledge holder and the Indigenous communities. Now, this natural or juristic person under your trustee should be that is duly delegated in terms of the practices of an Indigenous community to represent that Indigenous community in matters pertaining to Indigenous knowledge. Now, I don't mean to be racist. But the development world, the Indigenous world, any name that you want to put on it, has been dominated by white monopoly capital, to quote the EFF. And we need to change that. Free, prior, informed consent. This is 10 years of blood, sweat, and tears that I'm talking about here in this presentation. Free, prior, informed consent means the consent of the Indigenous knowledge holder or Indigenous community. It does not mean that you ask somebody else. You ask the person who knows. Free, prior, informed consent means, in respect of Indigenous knowledge use, after full disclosure of the intent and scope of the activity in a language and process understandable to the Indigenous knowledge holder or Indigenous community. Case in point, this specific committee meeting, the process that was followed was, I saw an advert in the newspaper. If we're dealing with Indigenous communities, the majority of them are illiterate and cannot access these processes. So processes are fundamental to be changed in how we deal with our communities if we're serious about this bill. The commercialization, utilization of Indigenous knowledge and enforcement of rights, product development, commercialization, services, and processes. NICSO may, at the request of an Indigenous community, provide assistance or facilitate the commercial use of its Indigenous knowledge. Free, prior, informed consent for the use of Indigenous knowledge is required for any of the following: face-to-face teaching, criticism or academic review. I'm a bit in doubt about that one. Reporting news or current events, judicial proceedings, academic purposes, commercial utilization of Indigenous knowledge and enforcement of rights, product development, this is the same thing. Any use that is incidental to the above purposes. A user of the Indigenous knowledge must, in the circumstances contemplated, acknowledge the Indigenous knowledge holders by mentioning them and the geographical place from which the knowledge originates. Benefit sharing. Benefit sharing means the fair and equitable sharing of benefits in terms of a benefit sharing agreement between the principal parties of the agreement. Now I'm speaking about an Indigenous community and the private partners, the agreement that they go into. There's three parts to this party. It's the Indigenous community, it's the private sector, and then it's NICSO. NICSO facilitates this process. NICSO, as the issuer of the license, is entitled to 1% of the agreement. The Indigenous knowledge holder or the community accrues all monetary payments from the access to or use of Indigenous knowledge and may comprise participation in scientific research, fair and equitable sharing of research and development results, and commercial and other benefits derived from indigenous knowledge, access to, use of, and transfer of technology, priority access to results and benefits. NICSO, as the issuer of the license, is entitled to 1% of accruing from such access. The objectives of the Act is to promote the indigenous knowledge of indigenous knowledge holders and indigenous communities from all unauthorized use and misappropriation. NICSO's role is to promote public awareness and understanding of indigenous knowledge for the wider application through public-private partnerships and the development thereof. When I say that NICSO must promote public awareness, this has significant budgetary implications because NICSO will have to have an office in every province with its staff. Their staff will have to go to the ground, to the communities, and verbally, orally do what is normally done on paper. And if you're dealing with the Bushman community, it takes 3 days for them to understand something fully and to agree with it or to disagree with it. With other people, you can tell them something now and they will understand and they'll reach a final decision, not in my community. And that is going to cost you money. NICSO should develop and enhance the ability of indigenous knowledge holders and indigenous communities to protect their indigenous knowledge. What that means in reality is, when you have an application form, that the indigenous knowledge holder or the indigenous community has to complete, your staff will have to educate them first and then assist them with the application form. To promote the commercial use and benefit sharing of indigenous knowledge for the benefit of indigenous knowledge holders or indigenous communities in the development of new products, services, and processes. How you're going to do this is you're going to work in collaboration with higher education institutions who are going to assist the community because they will see when there's a new invention, so it can be patented, copyrighted, and done, all those intellectual property things. The objectives of the Act continued to provide for the registration, cataloging, documentation, and recording of indigenous knowledge held by indigenous knowledge holders and indigenous communities for their protection. Here is the job of NICSO.
What's your name?
Martina spoke earlier. And she pointed out the problem. I'm going to give you the answer. To establish criteria, norms, and unit standards for indigenous knowledge of the various indigenous knowledge holders and indigenous communities. I will use the Bushman as an example. Simple. Tracking. There is an expert. Take note, in inverted commas, expert. Louis Lieberberg. He wrote a book on tracking. He came to Umdawit and they made a book. For all indigenous knowledge in the various communities, I reiterate, NICSO is going to need a ginormous budget because you're going to have to get the academics to actually think and work for a change. They will have to create norms and unit standards for indigenous knowledge across the country in the various communities. That's why I'm saying it's important that in each province, NICSO has an office with people that actually want to work, that get up in the morning, get in the car, drive to the community, and talk and do and observe with the researcher, and that's how you create the criteria and the norms and the unit standards. And once you've done that, then you will create the mechanisms for accreditation through SACWA. We've done it. This is very doable. The functions and powers of NICSO include protecting and recognizing Indigenous knowledge as property owned by Indigenous knowledge holders and Indigenous communities. Facilitating the redress of rights and benefits, which means, according to the previous speaker, I would like to comment on the previous speaker about literature. There is no exceptions. There should be no exceptions. Protecting and recognizing Indigenous knowledge as property owned by Indigenous knowledge holders and Indigenous communities. Because there is no exceptions, prior to 1994 and to date, facilitating the redress of rights and benefits to Indigenous knowledge holders and communities, which have previously been deprived of such rights and benefits. The functions and powers of NICSO. Facilitating and coordinating the development of Indigenous knowledge by establishing criteria, which NICSO will do, because NICSO will be funding the academics to do the necessary research, to establish the criteria for norms and unit standards, for Indigenous knowledge of the various Indigenous knowledge holders and Indigenous communities. NICSO, once they have the criteria, will establish and manage the registration and accreditation of Indigenous knowledge holders and communities. And their staff will be assisting the Indigenous communities to do the application. Their staff will be assisting the communities by educating them about the bill, by informing them of the processes and procedures that they have to follow, and to assist them to complete such applications. To recognize the Indigenous knowledge of Indigenous knowledge holders and or communities under intellectual property laws. The intellectual property laws, I can't remember if I said this already, but the whole morning and yesterday, I heard that intellectual property expert speaking here. And he seemed to note that there's a conflict between the current intellectual property law, which, by the way, is a Eurocentric construct. So I don't see any problem for Parliament to get African legal minds to apply their minds to a matter of national interest, relevance, and finance. Empowering Indigenous communities through education and awareness campaigns, facilitating and funding research to enable Indigenous communities to recognize and utilize Indigenous knowledge for cultural and economic benefit. Facilitating research to determine the criteria for issuing licenses for the use of Indigenous knowledge. Facilitating, this is all NICSO's work, eh? Facilitating the legal frameworks for IKS and legal representation for Indigenous knowledge holders and or communities to register their intellectual property rights under intellectual property laws. NICSO should assist Indigenous knowledge holders and or communities in the negotiation of benefit sharing agreements for the use of the Indigenous knowledge. and of course carry out any functions that are consistent with the object of this act. License holder. We have lived through the danger of this license holder. License holder in this act should mean the indigenous knowledge holder or indigenous community or any person who applies for and is granted a license by NICSO to use indigenous knowledge, which is subject to the free prior informed consent of the indigenous knowledge holder or indigenous community. It should include a benefit sharing agreement with the indigenous knowledge holder or indigenous community. And when I talk about the benefit sharing agreement, we are referring to the going market rate and not whatever the private partner deems fit to pay the traditional knowledge holder or community. Including a benefit sharing agreement with the indigenous knowledge holder at the going market rate, or indigenous community with NICSO as the issuer of the license being entitled to 1% of the agreement. Protection of indigenous knowledge. This act must protect indigenous knowledge, whether it is cultural or functional in nature or both, including medical, agricultural, scientific practices, knowledge of a scientific or technical nature, knowledge of natural resources, indigenous cultural expressions, phonetic or verbal expressions, musical and sound expressions, archaeological and historical sites, artifacts, designs, ceremonies, technologies, visual, performing arts, and literature. Can I take a minute? Can I have a minute? I need to swallow some water. Vesting of rights in indigenous knowledge. Okay. Vesting of rights in indigenous knowledge. The ownership of indigenous knowledge eligible for protection in respect of an indigenous community in terms of Section 9 vests in the indigenous knowledge holder or that indigenous community. Now, I should clarify that point. NICSO has a fundamental function. The government officials working for NICSO have to use their brains, their hearts, and their souls. Because you will go into a community and there will be factions and there will be competing and you'll have to know what you're doing. So you will have to decide if you register this thing to the indigenous knowledge holder or you register to the community. So there's things that needs doing here. The indigenous knowledge holder or the specific indigenous community are the trustees of the indigenous knowledge of that community. Vesting of rights in indigenous knowledge. NICSO shall be responsible to the indigenous knowledge holder and or the indigenous community for the protection of their rights. You are going to be our custodian. NICSO must facilitate the identification and designation of all indigenous property. I disagree with the previous speaker. Martinay said, if things cannot be identified, then the money must go to Nixo. I disagree. You can't be having indigenous knowledge and it doesn't belong to anybody. So, Nixo must facilitate the identification and designation of all indigenous property to the indigenous knowledge holders or the indigenous communities for the protection of their rights in respect of that indigenous knowledge. Accreditation and certification of indigenous knowledge practitioners. When I speak, please, you people think of the budgetary allocation that goes according to what I'm saying here. Nixo must educate, initiate, and facilitate the applications of indigenous knowledge holders and practitioners to Nixo to be accredited and certified as indigenous knowledge practitioners and recorded in the Register of Designations. Nixo, in agreement with the indigenous knowledge holder or community, may refer the application to an agreed-upon agent. This sounds very simple, but it's fundamentally important. I will use my neighborhood as an example. When you talk about tracking in my area, let me tell you a joke first. Meer is the only place in the world when the police comes to you and somebody's broken into your house. The first thing that the policeman says is, did you take the tracks? This is what the people do. You're supposed to know, to track the person, to follow the tracks, to catch the thief. So what indigenous knowledge is concerned about, I'm speaking from my context. What indigenous knowledge is concerned about and what indigenous knowledge holders are concerned about is very important that you have the community and the knowledge holders on board and you together with Nixo come to an agreement on a suitable tester. Now, I don't want to badmouth non-governmental organizations and all these money-hungry creatures, but they came to our neighborhood and they played with tracking. But you can go now and you can go ask Noi. When it comes to the crepers, they don't want anybody but Louis Liebenberg because he knows his stuff. So when you go into any indigenous community, don't think for people. They can think for themselves. They know better. They will tell you, we must do it like this, we must do it like that. I want that and that person to test me because they know what we're talking about. And that doesn't just apply to my neighborhood. It applies across the country, I'm sure. Nixo, in agreement with the indigenous knowledge holder or community, may refer the application to an agreed-upon person or agent who has competence in the particular discipline in which that person wishes to practice for assessment and recommendation. In assessing the eligibility of the applicant, the agent must apply the prescribed norms and standards for accreditation of indigenous knowledge holders or communities. Now, this norms and standards, of course, has been drawn up by the academics, which you have funded, Nixo has funded, to do the research to create the criteria. Nixo's register. In any proceedings relating to in respect of rights of registered indigenous knowledge holders and communities knowledge, Nixo must empower the indigenous communities through education and awareness campaigns of the proceedings and particulars, I can't reiterate this enough. NICSO must empower Indigenous communities through education and awareness campaigns, and that's where your offices in each province comes in. Of the proceedings and particulars entered in the register from the date of the advertisement of that registration in an Indigenous Knowledge Bulletin. And NICSO must educate the general public that any person using Indigenous knowledge, this is where SABC comes in, TV, you run ads there on the TV. NICSO must educate the general public and the radio stations with 18. NICSO must educate the general public that any person using Indigenous knowledge that is registered to a specific person or community is subject to the prerequisite of a benefit sharing agreement at the going market rate prior to the commencing of such use. Offences and penalties. Any person who uses Indigenous knowledge in a manner which is inconsistent with a license issued for that Indigenous knowledge shall be guilty of an offence and liable to a fine or a suspension for a period of 6 months. Any person who hinders or interferes with the management of an official in the performance of their official duties in terms of this Act shall be referred to the Dispute Resolution Committee for arbitration, because I can guarantee you they're going to interfere with your officials. And it's our people, so you can't be sending them to jail or fining them huge amounts. So they just need to be explained to. Transnational arrangements. A previous speaker spoke about across groups. Indigenous knowledge originating in a foreign jurisdiction must be given the same protection given to Indigenous knowledge originating in the Republic. I will give you an example of the Kuga. I don't know what the English name is for that. In South Africa, there are lots of areas. Kugap is a wood that we burn for to clear the air. I was at university last year for a few years, and I smelled the medicine, and the Xhosa, the Zulu, the Sotho, they also use this kugap. But they use it differently, in a different way. I see that the traditional healers here in Cape Town, they grind it and then they make it into a perfume. So, when it comes to medicine,
Spencer, yeah. Can I propose that you summarize your presentation, because the next presenter also has a flight to catch back.
Okay, so must I finish now?
Yeah, actually. Yeah, we had 20 minutes, but we've gone far beyond.
Oh, now which part do I leave out?
No, just summarize your.
Oh.
Remember also the process. You will be going to the provinces.
Okay. Yes. Oh no, I can go on all day on this. Okay. Let me just go to key recommendations then. Short term. The key recommendations are the following. A resource task team to work with the portfolio committee regarding this bill. The creation of intellectual property rights law conducive to the protection of IKS. Medium term. Provincial offices of NICSO needs to be established in each province situated closest to the nearest indigenous community. Partnerships with higher education institutions across provinces. Longer term. Funding and investment in research with indigenous communities as an equal partner and not merely as an object of research. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pinto, for your presentation and highlighting the areas that you did. The committee will look again at this presentation, the one that you submitted to us, and in some areas we couldn't find what is on the slides on the but we will look at both what you presented before, what you've submitted before, and the what is on the slides.
Okay.
Honourable members? Mm-hmm. Can I ask Honourable Paulson to come and sit with the committee members here? Honourable Paulson?
Thank you, Chairperson. I only oblige because you asked so nicely.
Ms. Pinto,
Ms. Pinto,
you can still sit here because there might be questions.
Oh. No, I hope you see you often.
Honourable Paulson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation, Ms. Pinto. I think it's been very educational for the most of us here. And I think the problem that we have is, you know, when you speak about indigenous communities in this very Eurocentric setup, it's almost as if they don't exist. And I think this is where this bill is really flawed, is because of how lack of knowledge and almost total ignorance as far as indigenous communities are concerned. And I'd like to know is, in terms of those indigenous communities, and I think a lot of people here think that they don't exist here in the Western Cape, but I'm aware, and you know as well. And what are you doing about making sure that those indigenous communities are acknowledged and that they are consulted in terms of this? Because this bill wants to regulate not just knowledge, but in my view, an entire culture. So what have you done to sort of bring those communities on board and get them involved, mobilize those communities to prevent this third wave of theft that we're going to suffer?
Are you asking me that?
Yes.
That's not my job, that is NICSO's job.
Thank you, Ms. Pinto. Honorable Matali.
Thank you very much for that beautiful answer. You made comments.
No, please switch off your phone, your microphone.
You made comments and your presentation was excellent. But you raised a question. I thought you will be also helpful to say to us this is the best way to communicate with this community, and not the form in which you did when you said that you saw the advert and the community we are talking about, or the communities that we are talking about, did not see they are illiterate. So what will be the best way to communicate with them in terms of your own experience and understanding? Thank you.
The best way is for NICSO people to go to the ground, like I said earlier. You go into the community, you have a communal meeting, you take the time to go through any information line by line. They will say yes, yes, yes. You come back tomorrow. They will sleep over it. What they didn't understand, they come tomorrow, then they ask you, did you say this? Did you mean that? Then they go back again, and they sleep again. And the third day, then they understand what you're talking about. That's in my community. That's how the thinking works. So it is going to the ground and doing the footwork, and it's oral. It's talking. It's not writing.
Thank you, Ms. Lito, for your response. I just also want to bring to your attention that besides the mainstream newspapers that the advert was on, in each province there was advert on the local newspaper, so that we try and reach out to everybody in their language. But also, as I said in between your presentation, that when we are done as the National Assembly, the process will go to the National Council of Provinces, and they will take the process to the provinces also to make inputs, but also conduct those public hearings at provincial level. Thank you very much. Any other question from Member Honorable King?
Thank you for that insightful presentation. I hear you mentioned through your presentation about the going market rate. I just want to bring it to your attention. When you, Elias, talk about going market rate, you should consider that it is very vague to mention something like that, because up to date, they haven't actually clearly stated what is the indigenous knowledge which will then be have to be itemized. So that statement could bring in a lot of contentious issues, especially around monetary value. Then you also say that NICSA will then be entitled to a 1%. How specifically did you come to determine that percentage?
Okay, let me start in the beginning. Let me just find the paper to answer you. Okay. I came to 1% for NICSO, because NICSO is going to be making so much money that they don't need more than 1% from every indigenous knowledge holder and community. Let me make an example of the lady that painted the BMW. Let me make the example of the guy from who made the Please Call Me for Vodacom, 6.74 billion or something. So NICSO is don't need more than 1%, because if you put all the indigenous knowledge holders together in this country, NICSO I'm sure makes more than the GDP. Now,
thank you very much.
Can I just answer one other thing there? Covered it in everything that has to be covered under IKS. All of those categories NICSO has to cover. I know some of those fall under arts and culture, but absolutely everything has to fall under NICSO.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pinto, for your presentation. Educational and well presented. The committee will look, as I said, to what it submitted, the full presentation and also the slides, and then consider the issues that are there. And also that please inform the community back home that the process will be coming to the I think one other point that you're making of having these public hearings and also interacting with the likes of you is that when you have information, share it with those that you believe that need to get the information, so that we don't just take what you are telling us, but that when it's time for the process to come to the provinces, those people that you believe deserve to make inputs are there to hear and to make their own submissions. But thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you. Honourable members, we now call Ms. Kentane. Apologies for taking long and understanding that you have a flight to catch. Thank you very much.
Greetings again, and thanks, Chair. My name is Tobeka Kentane, a stakeholder. However, I must add that I also happen to be an AKS activist and a practitioner as well. The overview, and I will also, anyway, I'll try to be as brief as I possibly can, because my understanding is that this process is still going to go out there and more information will be covered. The overview of what I'll be covering is basically the introduction, the knowledge forms, accreditation and certification, research and innovation, and came up with a few notes that are concerning regarding the bill. Then I'll be concluding. Indigenous knowledge has been there since time immemorial. While knowledge is just as is, pure and universal, it still is much a social and human phenomenon emanating from numeral realms of man's spirit, shaped by man's cosmology, cosmogony, epistemology, and ontology. I won't go down breaking those down. But to summarize the whole introduction is, as a practitioner and as an activist, this bill has a very vital role to play because indigenous knowledge, one, it's no hidden fact. It has never been taken as something that exists until or unless you live it or you're from those communities that live the indigenous lifestyle. In summation to that, we've got a few knowledge forms. You know that we've got tangible knowledge, we've got intangible knowledge, we've got knowledge that is transferred, and it could be either verbally or practically. And because time evolves, we now have acquired knowledge as well. I am here again as a person who's been very, very instrumental in the process of accreditation and certification of indigenous knowledge holders. And we've been doing this process through the DST NICSA office. And I must state that the amount of work is very mountainous. The process involved needs patience, needs understanding, needs the heart for the exercise. And this process has been done through SACA standards, and we're also trying to see how the indigenous knowledge system can be fit in using the tools by SACA. And this process, of course, we are aware that it's going to involve different indigenous knowledge systems because indigenous knowledge is very vast. It's not only a specific group, it varies. Well, currently we are piloting the process, and each time we go through the processes, I can relate to the bill, how it's going to fit in, and how it's going to benefit the knowledge holders, how it's going to benefit the indigenous communities. Yes, there are loopholes here and there, but whatever humanly made error, it can be humanly fixed. Okay. Then it being that, I also noticed that when I was going through the bill, there are some challenges when it comes to research and innovation, particularly with reference to indigenous knowledge systems. Yes, we're living in a very Eurocentric atmosphere, and indigenous knowledge systems is another phenomenon that doesn't need one to take at face value or approach it from an emotional point of view. When you're dealing with indigenous knowledge systems, you have to embody it to a certain degree so that you can level with what is happening and be able to apply some rationale around things. When I looked into the bill, I checked on chapter 7, so I'll go to the bill itself. I picked up that there is no clear articulation of the protection of indigenous research and processes thereof. Except for the signing of the prior consent form and the benefit sharing agreement. But as to what processes have to be taken and what needs to be put into that, I could not pick that up, which then said maybe it's something that as a collective we could look into and see how best we can incorporate that into the bill, because by the time the bill becomes enacted, it's going to become a legal tool that has to protect the knowledge holders and the communities. IKS research, as it is currently stands, but for instance, we know that in terms of the IKS policy, there is research that is funded and all that, but the tools, for instance, that are used in the very research don't accommodate the indigenous knowledge systems. They are too Eurocentric, and they marginalize indigenous knowledge, which is something that I think from the legislative point of view, that needs to be rectified so as to endorse what we mean by protecting and promoting, developing and managing indigenous knowledge systems. And once that can be done, as we further engage and deliberate with the document, I feel that we will find a place for it and encode it in such a way that all parties leave the space in one piece. The few points that I've noted concerning the bill. Chapter 3, Section 5, Subsection G. I strongly feel that we need to add that there should be, that process must go in constant consultation with the community of practice in question. Unfortunately, I didn't capture or transcribe what is in the bill because my take was I was trying to prepare my presentation in such a way that I don't spend much time talking. Then chapter 3 again, section 6. While noting subsection 4, experience has proven that no matter how qualified...
I'm sorry, can I just get some clarity? When you say chapter, you're referring to the real chapter or you,
to the
clause?
I refer to the actual chapter.
Okay.
Remember, ma'am, the chapter,
yeah,
it's indicated that it's a chapter.
Okay.
Then there'll be
okay.
a clause or a section.
Okay.
Then
all
there's
right.
a subsection. Right. What I wanted to say is, as much as people can be qualified academically, but if a person does not identify with indigenous knowledge, or a person's heart is not in indigenous knowledge, so much can go wrong. And I'm a living example who have worked with people who are working for various departments dealing with indigenous people and indigenous knowledge system. And I've seen how things got messed up because people, they want to intellectualize certain things that need to be dealt with from the core of their existence. Then running down to chapter 4, subsection 12, section 12. There again, I at least feel that there must be an inclusion of how the trustee must be identified. We cannot just say anybody is a trustee. And that once that gets legislated, that gives guidance, in my opinion. Even if the matter ends up in a court of law, we'll be able to have a note or a source of reference as to this is how this was done and debate it further. in Chapter 6, Section 18, Subsection 1 and 2. In community of practices that have other bodies such as the councils or anything, I think it needs to be clear again in the bill as to how is this duality going to be handled. I'll make an example with the traditional health practitioners. If there's a council that has to register the practitioners, and NICSO also has to do this, what would be the difference between the two? How is this going to be managed, or how can this be synergized or synchronized in such a way that there's no confusion, again, as to who plays what role and what is the importance of the one as opposed to the other. Then Chapter 7, I felt again that something is missing, mostly when it comes to commercialization of indigenous knowledge. Because in my knowledge, prior to commercializing, the whole process starts from research. And I feel that the bill is not really speaking or saying anything to research of indigenous knowledge systems, how it should be protected, or the processes that should be followed, because again, if that is not legislated, further abuse of indigenous knowledge practitioners and the system itself is very open. Again, in Chapter 7, Subsection 1, subsection 1B, non-exclusive benefit sharing agreement with NICSO, I felt that that is very, very kind of vague. If it can be reviewed and be reworded in such a way that it doesn't create the confusion that I picked up from the previous presenter. And again, it will also enable in the processes, as it has already been recommended, that indigenous knowledge holders should be educated about certain things. It will be incorporated for them to understand how certain things work, because when it comes to the system of bioprospecting, it's a very long talk. And if people don't understand how that is, and from a legal point of view, again, it is not clearly articulated or encoded as to how these things should be done, we'll keep on hitting each other against the wall till things come. And in conclusion, I would like to appreciate this opportunity, and it would be with great appreciation that when the public consultation is rolled out, sufficient and adequate time be allocated to enable knowledge holders to engage with the document and to ensure that it is available in people's indigenous languages. And sufficient resources be rolled out towards the exercise, and avoid a rush job that will lead to reviews that could have been avoided. And to ensure that submissions are all engaged with and diligently considered. I am looking forward to the bill becoming enacted as a legal tool to effect the protection, promotion, development, and management of IDs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kentane, for your presentation and highlighting the areas that you believe needs special attention from the committee in the process of deliberating and finalizing the bill. Thanks. I want to reiterate also that some of the issues will not necessarily be in the bill itself, but will be in the regulations by the minister. But, thanks. Honorable members? Honorable Professor
Kubisa. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for such an enlightening presentation. Kendane, you make reference to the importance of research and the role it should play in this bill as a whole, and you see that there is some minimal reference to research. Who do you think perhaps could be factored in to enhance research, because you have also referred to indigenous knowledge systems being taken over by people who are not passionate about it, who are not at the core of it, and you tally that with research. Who do you feel? Should it just be academics or be people on the ground? Who must be involved in the research of the whole thing? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks for that question. You see, if you go back to my slides, sorry, I took out my USB. If you go back to the slides under research and innovation, there's a point where I indicate, for instance, the level of development as well. When the research was referred to, for instance, if I've got a plant, okay, and I produce to you as a scientist, or I bring it to you as a scientist, there are certain technicalities involved in this process. And if this bill doesn't take that into account and protect this knowledge and the knowledge holder, and clearly encode that in the bill, then we've got a problem. Because a lot has happened. And a lot is still happening. I've got a case in Davagas in my hands as we speak, but that's another story. So I was making reference to that. And again, it goes back to saying, if again within research, the development of knowledge holders is not protected as well and looked into as a very critical aspect, then we are wasting our time. Because the current processes only develop the academics. The knowledge holders are not developed. The thinking for now is that if you have been given whatever percentage you've benefited from as per the, or whatever that you've benefited as per your BSA, that's it. But being a knowledge holder myself and a practitioner, I feel that there's still room to develop knowledge holders again within the space that we live in. I hope that answers you.
Thank you very much. I just want to find out from you. You came when we had the preliminary meeting in Pretoria. You did, okay. Because I think you raised the issue of the researchers not going back to acknowledge their final work, acknowledge their source, especially in those indigenous areas. And it is something that we began also raising with some of the institutions of higher learning, of that aspect of those that have benefited from that indigenous knowledge not going back to thank the people and give them feedback on their research, on their final work, of which they've graduated based on the information that they were given by those areas. But it's something that we took serious, and we are beginning to raise in some areas and asking those who are doing research that, and especially when it comes to funding, those that are funded by whether the department or its entities, that in finalizing their research and whether master's, doctorate or postdoctorate, they have to go back and acknowledge that. And I think it's something that there's a need to have a clause that a person signs, and the need to be tracking on that to ensure that it is done. Thank you very much once again. Okay.
And if I may add on to that, Chair, is that even acknowledging that knowledge holder in their articles
be it a thesis or an article, whatever it is, acknowledge the knowledge of the source of the information as well.
Thank you very much. Honorable Paulson, can you be on record? We can't hear you.
Honorable Kornoff had a question before I had his hand up before me. You're fine. Thank you very much. Ms. Kintani, you said that that this bill, if I'm correct and I can recall correctly, that this bill benefits academics, but it does nothing for the knowledge holder. But you also said that you think that this bill will advance and promote indigenous knowledge. Would it then not just be promoting indigenous knowledge outside of indigenous communities and benefiting those outside of the indigenous community then?
The first part of your question, I think you're quoting me out of context. What I said was the bill does not benefit the indigenous, benefit the indigenous knowledge or it benefits the academics only. What I said was the bill, it needs to capture a clause that will ensure that also indigenous knowledge holders benefit in the process of research or any information that is taken from them. Because at the end of the day, if a knowledge holder is just there seen as a pool of knowledge and is left like that, is not acknowledged, does not benefit in any way, be it monetary or developed in any way, and that is not legislated, a lot are going to get away with murder with that. I know that currently, through DST, we are trying to address that, but until it is legally binding, then we will be safe.
Thank you very much. Honorable Koronov. Any other member wants to contribute? I would like to thank you, Ms. Kentani, for your presentation and all the areas that you highlighted. We believe they are important, and when the committee deliberates and look at all the submissions, we will look at your submissions. We will be looking at all the submissions that are made. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think Mr. Michael Griswood did not come, but there is a submission from him. And Dr. Caroline Ngube, also from UCT Department of Commercial Law, did not pitch up. So we coming to the end of today's public hearings. Those who came and would still want to make a submission can speak to Ms. Isaacs, Shanaz, to see where she can, because we're having these public hearings until next week. So we're here, tomorrow we're taking some, and up to next week we'll be doing that. But there will be light lunch that we're providing at the Palm Court in Max Building. That's right. So the meeting is adjourned to the honorable members. We will start at 10, and Shanaz will send us the updated program for tomorrow. Thank you for your time, your participation, your questioning, and the deliberation, and Thank you to the department, and thank you to all who made presentation and everybody who made time to come and be part of these public hearings. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned for today.